Chapter 54. Withhold his sustaining arm. But the captain obviously had no such intention. Standing firm and still, he gazed with somber eyes at Mr. Smith. For a time, the low convulsive sobbing of Mr. Smith's daughter was the only sound to trouble the silence. The strength of Anthony's clasp pressing Flora to his breast could not be doubted even at that distance, and suddenly, awakening to his opportunity, he began to partly support her, partly carry her in the direction of her cabin. His head was bent over her solicitously, then recollecting himself, with a glance full of unwonted fire, his voice ringing in a note unknown to Mr. Powell, he cried to him, "Don't you go on deck yet. I want you to stay down here till I come back. There are some instructions I want to give you." And before the young man could answer, Anthony had disappeared in the stern cabin, burdened and exulting. "Instructions," commented Mr. Powell. "Hat was all right. Very likely. But they would be such instructions as, I thought to myself, no ship's officer perhaps had ever been given before. It made me feel a little sick to think what they would be dealing with, probably. But there. Everything that happens on board ship on the high seas has got to be dealt with somehow. There are no special people to fly to for assistance. And there I was with that old man left in my charge. When he noticed me looking at him, he started to shuffle again athwart the saloon. He kept his hands rammed in his pockets, he was as stiff-backed as ever, only his head hung down. After a bit he says in his gentle soft tone, 'Did you see it?' There were in Powell's head no special words to fit the horror of his feelings. So he said he had to say something. Good God! What were you thinking of, Mr. Smith, to try to... dot?" And then he left off. He dared not utter the awful word poison. Mr. Smith stopped his prowl. "Think. What do you know of thinking?" "I don't think. There is something in my head that thinks. The thoughts in men, it's like being drunk with liquor or you can't stop them. A man who thinks will think anything." "No. But have you seen it? Have you?" "I tell you I have. I am certain," said Powell forcibly. "Was looking at you all the time. You've done something to the drink in that glass." Then Powell lost his breath somehow. Mr. Smith looked at him curiously, with mistrust. "My good young man, I don't know what you are talking about. I ask you, have you seen? Who would have believed it? With her arms round his neck. When? Oh. Ha. Ha. You did see. Didn't you? It wasn't a delusion, was it? Her arms round. ... But I have never wholly trusted her. Then I flew out at him," said Mr. Powell. "I told him he was jolly lucky to have fallen upon Captain Anthony. A man in a million." He started again shuffling to and fro. "Utu," he said mournfully, keeping his eyes down. "H? Wonderful man? But have you a notion who I am? Listen. I have been the great Mr. DeBarrel. So they printed it in the papers while they were getting up a conspiracy. And I have been doing time. And now I am brought low." His voice died down to a mere breath. Brought low. He took his hands out of his pocket, dragged the cap down on his head, and stuck them back into his pockets, exactly as if preparing himself to go out into a great wind. But not so low as to put up with this disgrace, to see her, fast in this fellow's clutches, without doing something. She wouldn't listen to me. Frightened? Silly? I had to think of some way to get her out of this. Did you think she cared for him? No. Would anybody have thought so? No. She pretended it was for my sake. She couldn't understand that, if I hadn't been an old man I would have flown at his throat months ago. As it was I was tempted every time he looked at her. My girl. Oh. Any man but this. And all the time the wicked little fool was lying to me. It was their plot, their conspiracy. These conspiracies are the devil. As he has been leading me on, till she has fairly put my head under the heel of that jailer, of that scoundrel, of her husband. ... Treachery. Bringing me low. Lower than herself. In the dirt. That's what it means. doesn't it? Under his heel. He paused in his restless shuffle and again, seizing his cap with both hands, dragged it furiously right down on his ears. Powell had lost himself in listening to these broken ravings, in looking at that old feverish face when, suddenly, quick as lightning, Mr. Smith spun round, snatched up the captain's glass, and with a stifled, hurried exclamation, "Here's luck," tossed the liquor down his throat. "I know now the meaning of the word consternation," went on Mr. Powell. "That was exactly my state of mind. I thought to myself directly, there's nothing in that drink. I have been dreaming, I have made the awfulest mistake." Mr. Smith put the glass down. He stood before Powell unarmed, quieted down, in a listening attitude, his head inclined on one side, chewing his thin lips. Suddenly he blinked queerly, grabbed Powell's shoulder and collapsed, subsiding all at once, as though he had gone soft all over, as a piece of silk stuff collapses. Powell seized his arm instinctively, and checked his fall, but as soon as Mr. Smith was fairly on the floor he jerked himself free and backed away. Almost as quick he rushed forward again, and tried to lift up the body. But directly he raised his shoulders he knew that the man was dead. Dead. He lowered him down gently. He stood over him without fear or any other feeling, almost indifferent, far away as it were. And then he made another start, and, if he had not kept Mrs. Anthony always in his mind, he would have let out a yell for help. He staggered to her cabin door, and, as it was, his call for Captain Anthony burst out of him much too loud. But he made a great effort of self-control. "I'm waiting for my orders, sir," he said outside that door distinctly, in a steady tone. It was very still in there, still as death. Then he heard a shuffle of feet, and the captain's voice, "LL Wright. Coming." He leaned his back against the bulkhead as you see a drunken man sometimes propped up against a wall, half doubled up. In that attitude the captain found him, when he came out, pulling the door to after him quickly. At once Anthony let his eyes run all over the cabin. Powell, without a word, clutched his forearm, led him round the end of the table, and began to justify himself. "Couldn't stop him," he whispered shakily. "He was too quick for me. He drank it up and fell down." But the captain was not listening. He was looking down at Mr. Smith, thinking perhaps that it was a mere chance his own body was not lying there. They did not want to speak. They made signs to each other with their eyes. The captain grasped Powell's shoulder, as if in a vice, and glanced at Mrs. Anthony's cabin door, and it was enough. He knew that the young man understood him. Rather. Silence. Silence forever about this. Their very glances became stealthy. Powell looked from the body to the door of the dead man's stateroom. The captain nodded, and let him go, and then Powell crept over, hooked the door open and crept back with fearful glances towards Mrs. Anthony's cabin. They stooped over the corpse. Captain Anthony lifted up the shoulders. Mr. Powell shuddered. LL never forget that interminable journey across the saloon, step by step, holding our breath. For part of the way the drawn half of the curtain concealed us from view, had Mrs. Anthony opened her door, but I didn't draw a free breath till after we laid the body down on the swinging cot. The reflection of the saloon light left most of the cabin in the shadow. Mr. Smith's rigid, extended body looked shadowy too, shadowy and alive. You know he always carried himself as stiff as a poker. We stood by the cot, as though waiting for him to make us a sign that he wanted to be left alone. The captain threw his arm over my shoulder and said in my very ear, "His steward'll find him in the morning." I made no answer. It was for him to say. It was perhaps the best way. It's no use talking about my thoughts. They were not concerned with myself, nor yet with that old man who terrified me more now than when he was alive. Him whom I pitied was the captain. He whispered, "I'm certain of you, Mr. Powell. You had better go on deck now. As to me..." And I saw him raise his hands to his head as if distracted. But his last words, before we stole out that cabin, stick to my mind with the very tone of his mother to himself, not to me. No. No. I am not going to stumble now over that corpse. This is what our Mr. Powell had to tell me, said Marlowe, changing his tone. I was glad to learn that Florida Barrel had been saved from that sinister shadow at least falling upon her path. We sat silent then, my mind running on the end of the barrel, on the irresistible pressure of imaginary griefs, crushing conscience, scruples, prudence, under their ever-expanding volume, on the somber and venomous irony in the obsession which had mastered that old man. Well, I said. The steward found him, Mr. Powell roused himself. He went in there with a cup of tea at 5, and of course dropped it. I was on watch again. He reeled up to me on deck pale as death. I had been expecting it, and yet I could hardly speak. Oh, and tell the captain quietly, I managed to say. He ran off muttering, why God? My God. And I'm hanged if he didn't get hysterical while trying to tell the captain and start screaming in the saloon, fully dressed. Dead. Fully dressed. Mrs. Anthony ran out, of course, but she didn't get hysterical. Franklin, who was there too, told me that she hid her face on the captain's breast, and then he went out and left them there. It was days before Mrs. Anthony was seen on deck. The first time I spoke to her, she gave me her hand and said, my poor father was quite fond of you, Mr. Powell. She started wiping her eyes, and I fled to the other side of the deck. One would like to forget all this had ever come near her. But clearly he could not, because after lighting his pipe he began musing aloud. Very strong stuff it must have been. I wonder where he got it. It could hardly be at a common chemist. Well, he had it from somewhere, a mere pinch it must have been, no more. I have my theory, observed Marlowe, which to a certain extent does away with the added horror of a coldly premeditated crime. Chance had stepped in there too. It was not Mr. Smith who obtained the poison. It was the great DeBarrel. And it was not meant for the obscure, magnanimous conqueror of Florida Barrel. It was meant for the notorious financier whose enterprises had nothing to do with magnanimity. He had his physician in his days of greatness. I even seem to remember that the man was called at the trial on some small point or other. I can imagine that DeBarrel went to him when he saw, as he could hardly help seeing, the possibility of a triumph of envious rivals, a heavy sentence. I doubt if for love, or even for money, but I think possibly, from pity, that man provided him with what Mr. Powell called strong stuff. From what Powell saw of the very act, I am fairly certain it must have been contained in a capsule, and that he had it about him on the last day of his trial, perhaps secured by a stitch in his waistcoat pocket. He didn't use it. Why? Did he think of his child at the last moment? Was it want of courage? We can't tell. But he found it in his clothes when he came out of jail. It had escaped investigation, if there was any. Chance had armed him. And chance alone, the chance of Mr. Powell's life, forced him to turn the abominable weapon against himself. I imparted my theory to Mr. Powell, who accepted it at once as, in a sense, favorable to the father of Mrs. Anthony. Then he waved his hand. On, let us think of it. I acquiesced, and very soon he observed dreamily. I was with Captain and Mrs. Anthony sailing all over the world for near on 6 years. Almost as long as Franklin. Oh yes. What about Franklin? I asked. Powell smiled. He left the Ferndale a year or so afterwards, and I took his place. Captain Anthony recommended him for a command. You don't think Captain Anthony would chuck a man aside like an old glove. But of course Mrs. Anthony did not like him very much. I don't think she ever let out a whisper against him, but Captain Anthony could read her thoughts. And again Powell seemed to lose himself in the past. I asked, for suddenly the vision of the Fines passed through my mind. Any children? Powell gave a start. Oh, no. Never had any children, and again subsided, puffing at its short briar pipe. Where are they now? I inquired next, as if anxious to ascertain that all Fine's fears had been misplaced and vain as our fears often are, that there were no undesirable cousins for his dear girls, no danger of intrusion on their spotless home. Powell looked round at me slowly, his pipe smoldering in his hand. Don't you know, he uttered in a deep voice. Know what? That the Ferndale was lost this 4 years or more. Sunk. Collision. And Captain Anthony went down with her. You don't say so. I cried quite affected, as if I had known Captain Anthony personally. As was Mrs. Anthony lost too? You might as well ask, if I was lost, Mr. Powell rejoined so testily, as to surprise me. You see me here, don't you? He was quite huffy, but noticing my wondering stare he smoothed his ruffled plumes. And in a musing tone. Yes. Good men go out, as if there was no use for them in the world. It seems as if there were things that, as the Turks say, are written. Or else fate has a try and sometimes misses its mark. You remember that close shave we had of being run down at night, I told you of, my first voyage with them. This go it was just at dawn. A flat calm and a fog thick enough to slice with a knife. Only there were no explosives on board. I was on deck, and I remember the cursed, murderous thing looming up alongside and Captain Anthony. We were both on deck, calling out, good God! What's this? Shout for all hands, Powell, to save themselves. There's no dynamite on board now. I am going to get the wife, I yelled, all the watch on deck yelled. Crash! Mr. Powell gasped at the recollection. T was a Belgian Green Star liner, the Westland. He went on, commanded by one of those stop-for-nothing skippers. Flaherty was his name, and I hope he will die without absolution. She cut half through the old Ferndale, and after the blow there was a silence like death. Next I heard the captain back on deck shouting, set your engine slow ahead, and a howl of yes, yes, answering him from her forecastle, and then a whole crowd of people up there began making a row in the fog. They were throwing ropes down to us in dozens, I must say. I and the captain fastened one of them under Mrs. Anthony's arms. I remember as he had a sort of dim smile on her face. Haul up carefully, I shouted to the people on the steamer's deck. You've got a woman on that line. The captain saw her landed up there safe. And then we made a rush around our decks, to see no one was left behind. As we got back the captain says, here she's gone at last, Powell, the dear old thing. Run down at sea. Indeed she is gone, I said. But it might have been worse. Shin up this rope, sir, for God's sake. I will steady it for you. What are you thinking about, he says angrily. T isn't my turn. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.